Hello, Hot Takedown listeners. This is Chadwick Matlin, one of the regulars on Hot Takedown. And this is not your scheduled programming, but it is still very good and exciting programming. We're bringing you a special Women's World Cup podcast today. It's comprised of a couple interviews that Allison McCann did this week. You'll know Allison from Significant Digits on Hot Takedown. The Women's World Cup kicks off this Saturday, and the U.S. women play their first match on Monday. And to find out more before they did, Allison had a conversation with U.S. soccer legend and ESPN announcer Julie Foudy to preview the tournament and talk about 538's own predictions. And after that, you'll hear Allison and two members of the current women's team, Kelly O'Hara and Kristen Press, discuss their preparation for the tournament. And again, if you haven't heard this week's Hot Takedown, we do a full preview of the World Cup there. And of course, you can find our predictions, which are automatically updating throughout the tournament, and lots more on the Women's World Cup at 538.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back with a regular episode next Tuesday.
Hey everyone, it's Allison McCann again, a visual journalist at 538, and doing another Women's World Cup podcast this week. I feel like it's like Christmas for me with all this women's soccer news. And today I have a very special guest, ESPN analyst and former U.S. women's national team player, Julie Foudy. Hey, Julie.
Hi, Allison.
Julie is at the Mothership in Bristol right now. She's doing a ton of great work in this crazy week of FIFA and the run-up to the World Cup. So definitely check out all of, I know you guys have some group previews on ESPNW that you've been doing and a ton of SportsCenter hits. I know you're everywhere, so I really appreciate you taking some time for us.
No worries.
I feel like we're kind of like kindred souls, Julie. We're both from Southern California. We both played soccer at Stanford, and I also played for the Sacramento Storm a few summers when I was in college. So, you know, I just
look at that. Huh?
I couldn't quite win any gold medals or World Cups, but other than that, we were totally the same person.
Those are overrated, Allison.
But now we're back together at ESPN, and I'm super excited to have you here. A lot of what we do at 538 is forecasting elections, but also sports tournaments. We did the Men's World Cup last year. We did Men's and Women's March Madness basketball tournaments this year. And this is our first forecast of a Women's World Cup. I also think it's maybe the first forecast ever for any Women's World Cup, which is super exciting. It's a really new model, which is cool. We put together like a big database of about 8,000 international women's soccer matches since 1970. I'm sure, Julie, many of which you are in, so you are like part of this model in some small way, which is cool. And we use these to make this Women's Soccer Power Index, which is like a rating of all the teams, similar to the FIFA ratings, but we think they're a little bit better. You know, they take into account home field advantage and the scoring margin and, you know, when these games were played. And so they're a little more nuanced. And anyway, we've used these to do some predictions for this year's World Cup. We're giving the U.S. the greatest chance of winning the tournament, a 28% chance, but Germany's right there behind them with a 27% chance. And those two teams are kind of ahead of the pack, but Japan, France, Canada, Brazil, Sweden are all right up there too, around 7, 8, 9%.
Right.
So I wanted to hear sort of your first impressions when you saw these. Like, did you really think that the U.S. and Germany were that much better than the rest of the world?
I think,
and you can be totally honest if you think this is all horrible.
Right. I actually think the one that falls closer to the United States and Germany, and you have as an outlier, I think you have France at 7%.
Yeah.
Is France. So I would do the U.S., Germany, and France as those top three, all kind of similar, and then and then, you know, you have the drop from there. But I can understand why you have the drop. but I would, having seen France a few times now, they're legit.
I know. I've been too on Team France for a while now and been very,
yeah.
Everyone's been calling them the dark horse, but I'm like, no, they're not. Everybody loves them. And they're so fun to watch right now. Les Sommer and Nassib are just incredible together.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited to see them too. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. And they're really good everywhere, which has always been the problem with France. In the past, they'd had gaps everywhere. Or they'd have, you know, good players and then gaps. But now it's like every line, even their goalkeeper is very strong. So they're good.
One thing with the model is that obviously it's backward facing and it's looking a lot historically at, you know, how World Cups have gone and stuff, and U.S. And Germany have obviously performed the best of any country. But I think that a big thing that's been following this World Cup is this idea that sort of the rest of the world is catching up and, you know, closing this gap. And Japan, France, Canada, Brazil, I could see all of those teams winning, even with a 7, 8, 9, 10% chance.
I think that second tier for sure is getting better. So, for example, in our day, right, you had probably five teams that could win the World Cup, ourselves, Germany, Brazil, China, and Norway, I would say, is your top five, right?
Yeah.
Sweden is kind of an outlier at six, although they were close a couple times. So maybe six. So, and you have about that many that still could win it today, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that second tier, right, is so much better. And you had a considerable drop just because there wasn't the attention and funding you're getting in some of these programs now. There wasn't that attention. Now you're seeing France, who wasn't even a contender, you know, in the 90s, become now a world contender. You're seeing Japan, again, another one, who wasn't a contender. England's getting better. Even that other day, the send-off game we called, you know, on Saturday, South Korea, who, you know, no one knows much about because they haven't played a friendly in their home country for 17 years. I mean, how about that?
Oh,
so
my God.
It's that second tier now who are getting better, and that's what's pushing the game. But it doesn't, to me, seem like there's more actual teams that could win it, because when you go down that list, I don't consider Brazil in that list that could win it. They have Marta, right? But they have a lot of gaps. And then I see Sweden as an outlier too.
Yeah, let's talk about the Sweden game. We do the forecast too for individual games, and we're giving the U.S. a 58% chance of winning that group stage match against Sweden, compared to they only have a 20% chance of winning, and then obviously the other 22% chance that the game ends in a tie. And I was surprised at this. I have a very fond place in my heart for Sweden. I have some family there, and I have some very good friends that played it over there, and I visited and stuff. But so that was me, like, totally against the model, being like, oh, man, I thought Sweden would be better. But what do you think?
What were the chances that we would beat them?
The U.S. has a 58% chance. So, you know, just over half, Sweden has a 20% chance of winning. But I guess I thought it would be more of like a 50-50.
I don't know. I would have thought that one was more 50-50 too, because Pia Sundhage, their coach, of course, at Sweden, she was the coach of the United States. So of anyone out there, she knows this U.S. team front and backwards, and knows how to press their buttons. And they've had their struggles with Sweden. The United States lost to them in the last World Cup and finished second in their group. So I actually have the U.S. in my model, I predicted coming out second in the group with no stats or analytical background at all.
Julie's model.
It's my model, which is simply the gut. And that was more because, you know, it just made things a little more exciting if they come out second. But, no, I think that could go either way.
I know that's the worst part about working at 538 is there's no room for the gut, and I'm always like wanting to be like, wait, but that's why it's fun to do this kind of stuff and just
there's always room for the gut.
Okay, I don't want to have to do this, but I feel like we have to, so let's just quickly breeze through FIFA, because it's been a disaster this week, and, you know, I feel like you feel the same way as me. That's just like, you know, we're 3 days away from the World Cup. All of this attention is on, you know, SEP and FIFA and not on the World Cup. And it's sort of detracting from the tournament. And I can't imagine this would have ever happened, you know, 3 days before a men's World Cup. But I don't know, maybe on the flip side of that, just more attention around soccer in general.
Yeah, I actually think the latter. I think it would be all right, because I think there's more people going, what the hell? I got to tune in. It's like every day. I mean, we just went to shoot the ESPN FC show, and right before we go on air, you know, they released the report from the 20-page transcript of Chuck Blazer admitting, who's of course the former FIFA executive committee member from America, admitting that he took bribes for as part of his vote and the governing body's vote for South Africa in 2010 to host the World Cup, and also for 1998. They don't know if it was for France or Morocco, because those two were lost doing the bidding. But, you know, it's like every day something jaw-dropping comes out. So I think if this continues at this pace throughout the Women's World Cup, that becomes a distraction. But right now, I don't mind it because all of a sudden there's this focus on the global game. And what a powerful testament when they, you know, turn on the TV and instead you get to watch actually the beautiful game being played. And it's this wonderful break from all this negativity to watch these women who, I mean, the stories are so phenomenal, as you know, who, you know, you have the Costa Rican players, some of them have to take three buses to get to practice and then they go to work. And it's like this story of just pursuing this dream without any funding, without a lot of support, and often in countries that don't even want women playing, and yet they still carry on.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that positivity will shine through the negativity in the end.
We kind of did like a fun thing yesterday just between the staff at 538 where we just sort of shot off random ideas of how to fix FIFA. Everyone was just bouncing things off the wall. And one thing that I had said is like maybe there shouldn't be one governing body for both the men's and women's game because they are so different. And I guess I think about, you know, who has the best interests of an entire country. And that gets really hard for countries that have very strong men's teams and not very strong women's teams, you know, like places like Argentina come mm-hmm. to mind, Spain. How bonkers do you think that would be if we had sort of two separate FIFAs?
Well, money drives everything, right? And as I get older in life, you start to understand that even more. I mean, the power is money. And so what I actually think, it's interesting because each member association within FIFA, which there are 209, right? And we've seen now with the whole bladder election process, you know, you can have a country that's the size of Bristol gets the same power to wield one vote as the entire United States. But they all get, like this year, they each got $1 million payout because they made so much money off the World Cup in 2014. So of that $1 million that every FIFA member makes, 15% of that is mandated that they spend on their women's football programs, which, of course, there's no transparency or checks and balances to find out because the same FIFA that hands them the money is also needing their vote eventually in elections. And so they're not going to wield the hammer, right?
Yeah.
So it's, but that mandate is there. Now, if you could provide, and if this is possible, because the money is there, if you could take all this money, the billions that are coming in for this great game, and we know that's going to be there. The fans are going to love it. They're going to love when it's cleaned up. They're going to still watch it, right? They're going to come. The marketing money's going to be there. So could you provide some system where a percentage went to the women's programs? And, you know, and 15% of $1 million is $150,000, which isn't that much to the United States Soccer Federation, but to Jamaica, which, you know, Sadella Marley essentially funded on her own, Bob Marley's daughter, then that could change that program. So, but there is, at this moment, there's no way to tell if they're getting that money. And based on the news that comes out every day, the fact that Chuck Blazer had a penthouse just for his cats, I'm guessing they're not getting the money.
I know. I keep saying this, that I have been joking that, like, at least if FIFA was going to do, like, terribly corrupt things and steal all this money, like, couldn't we, like, at least have, you know, seen some of that trickle down over to the Women's World Cup? It's just like we're out here hustling, like not getting any, reaping any of the benefits of FIFA bribes,
yeah.
Probably.
You know, it's when you hear the stories of and that's one of the things I hope that comes out of this World Cup as well. And not in a bang a stick over someone's head, you know, woe is me type of way, we're the victims. It's just, here's the stories of these women that care so deeply about this game and who love to play and who are chasing this dream. And here's what they go through, you know. And Trinidad, yeah, and I've told this story in Sports Center the last few days, Trinidad comes to the World Cup qualifiers and can't even afford to buy the team lunch. You know, and this is the same region that is embezzling, you know, millions of dollars from Jack Warner.
Yeah, I remember that. That was like Randy Waldrum that was like tweeting out, like asking for money, right?
Yeah.
Being like, can we just get any sort of donations? That was crazy. All right, let's talk also Abby really quick, since I think a lot of the discourse also around the U.S. team has sort of centered on Abby. She was quoted in the Times last week saying, you know, I think in reference to the direct style that the U.S. has been known to play. You know, she said, because people are a little bit scared, she said, referring to her teammates, which they actually later updated to say referring to the pressure. But anyway, she continues. They're like, I'm going to pump that ball up to Wambach and see what happens. I don't want to play this little 5-yard ball, because if I pass it and it gets picked off and we get scored on, then it's my fault. And I think a lot of people were really shocked, you know, to hear her admit that, and, you know, to hear that the U.S. still sometimes does resort to, you know, to this direct style of play that Abby knows so well, but that maybe, you know, has gone out of style a little bit in the women's game in the past few years as more technical possession style teams like Japan and France continue to get better. And I don't know, I'm sort of one of two mindsets on this. You know, I get that. Abby's sentiments. I love to watch this kind of soccer. I've been, you know, probably like once a week the past month. I watched the clip of the Abby goal in overtime, I guess extended time in overtime against Brazil.
Right.
And I think it's actually you're commenting that game, and you say like, oh my God, look at this ball, referring to Pino's like lob of desperation.
Yeah.
And so what are your thoughts on this? Will the U.S. go back to that, what's comfortable, what they know, what they do well, which can be very effective at a World Cup and get you an overtime goal,
right,
versus knowing that they do need to be
right,
more technical and possess the ball?
Well, I think that one of the great attributes of U.S. soccer, both the men and the women, is they have this hardness to them. And this mentality of, it doesn't matter how many we're down, we're going to fight through it, and this really blue-collar working class mentality, right? That has always defined U.S. soccer and always will. But to be successful for the women, now that second tier, as we talked about, is getting better and the top teams are getting better, you have to then layer in that sophistication as well. And we were guilty of it as well when I played, right, is relying on the athleticism and the power and the fitness and wearing teams down. And but you have to have a level of sophistication that goes with it. And that's the progression for this program. And so it's one thing to be able to have that in your back pocket, but if you start relying on that, you can't get the ball against these teams. I mean, look at South Korea. And that's a team who didn't have a lot of offensive weapons up front that would score goals, but they kept the ball. And they were sophisticated on the ball when they had it, and they frustrated U.S. players. So I just don't think you can win a World Cup without that sophistication. And that's where the younger players and that confidence that Abby talks about, having the ability in a high-pressure situation to say, I'm going to spin out of pressure, I'm going to play with a sophistication that I'm confident enough to play with.
I wish we could add the USA heart and fight as some portion of the model too, because I'm always like, I think that's like a crazy thing that I don't see in a lot of other countries, and it is
statistics. You know, that's a great point, because they'll say, even every coach that comes over here, like Pia, who came from Sweden, Tommy Sormani, who coached Australia before that, you know, they all say, holy crap, I almost said a swear word, you would have to bleep me. Do you have that on podcast? The U.S., they just are so hard. They train so hard. They're so competitive. Like, there's this mentality and this strength to them that's just crazy. It blew my mind when I saw them train.
Yeah.
So, and they'll never lose that, but they also have to layer in the other stuff.
Okay, last question. Back to our model versus the Julie model, which I wasn't aware that you also have. So if you had to bet on a winner of the tournament, and you could pick either the U.S. or Germany or the rest of the world, who would you pick? Who would you pick?
U.S.
U.S. All right. You heard it here.
Joy
Fatty.
Yeah, I'm staying there. I know. I just think we're too deep. We have too much. And then 7 games in, we'll wear teams down, right? So maybe we're not playing. The United States is not playing its best going into this World Cup, but I think that they will step up. And this is a team that just thrives under that pressure. We've seen it with so many big moments. And for Abby's sake, so she doesn't go crazy the rest of her life, I want her to win a World Cup.
All right, you guys heard it here.
So I have to continue hearing about it.
The Julie model and the 538 model align, choosing the U.S. to win the tournament.
Imagine that.
Thanks so much, Julie, for chatting with me. It was so fun to catch up. And I guess I'll see you up in Canada, right?
All right, Allison.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Allison McCann. I'm a visual journalist at 538. And I'm here today with Kelly O'Hara and Kristen Press, two members of the U.S. Women's National Team, who are taking time out of their very busy day here in New York to hang out with me. Thanks, guys, for coming.
No problem.
We're 3 days away from your last game before you head to the World Cup next week, which is so exciting. How are you feeling right now?
Well, I'm so excited. I feel like I've been preparing my whole life to get to this moment, and now it's finally here, playing my first World Cup. And we're excited. We have so much energy. We just got together as a team, and we're ready to go.
So it's your first World Cup, Kristen, but Kelly, this is your second. So if you had to give Kristen one piece of World Cup advice as a veteran, it doesn't even have to be related to soccer. It can just be like, don't eat the free dumplings or something.
I don't know.
Yeah. I can't guarantee there's good dumplings in Canada. So that would be one piece of advice.
What's
don't eat
Canadian?
Them.
Okay.
They have like those chips that are like they're like ketchup chips or something. I don't know.
Don't eat those either.
My one piece of advice would be that you have all the tools that you need to, you know, succeed at that level. You've been there. It's the same game of soccer, and you're ready for that. So, and I think, as is anyone on the team, whether it's their first World Cup or, you know, their fourth, but I think it's important to know that, like, in your first one, and I wish someone would have told me this my first time around, that it is, as soon as you step on the field, it's the same game of soccer that you've played your whole life, so.
Thanks,
that's really exciting. It's better than dumplings and chips, but I feel like that is also good advice.
Yeah.
I realized I should, like, briefly say, that we are all friends and former teammates and roommates.
No.
And former roommates.
Not my friend.
Kristen used to be our friend, but no. And I guess I should do intros for you guys because, like, you need intros. Kelly plays for Sky Blue of New Jersey. Kristen plays for Chicago Red Stars, back from a few seasons in Sweden in the, I always say this wrong, Damallsvenskan?
Damallsvenskan,
which is the top league in Sweden. Where you kicked ass. I don't know if I can even say that. But now you're both playing in the U.S. and doing super well. How has it been in the league this season, kind of like jumping in and out of camp and World Cup and go to a game for a week? So it's been a little weird.
Yeah, the coaches had us go for three weeks in April, and we all got to play our first three games with our team. And I think it was good for us. You know, we'd been with the national team for a good amount of time leading up to that, and it was, for me, it was nice to just get back with the team that I've been with for the past two seasons. This is my third season, and play some games, and, you know, just kind of chill out on, like, the stress situation, because it can get stressful in camp. But it was nice to just be with the team and, you know, play a couple games. But, yeah, it was quick, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really tough what we do. We're all over the country. We're always living out of a suitcase and in a hotel. So sometimes it's nice to just, you know, go back to a place that you know with some familiar faces and exactly get to play the game, but at a different intensity where you can sort of try new things and breathe a little bit. But it is hard. It's hard missing games now and knowing that your team's playing and not being there and kind of just always being in two places at the same time. But it comes with the job.
Yeah. You guys are doing it well. Okay, I feel like a lot of people might be watching women's soccer for the first time this summer, like maybe had no idea that there was even a Women's World Cup. I get that question like three times a day. Like, this is so exciting, I didn't even know this existed. So what would you say to someone that maybe has never seen you guys play and is gonna, like, what would you be like, why you should watch the Women's World Cup?
Well, I think for Americans that are just coming into the whole world of soccer, the World Cup is awesome, and it's super well-suited for America. It's like a shooting star, 1 month, so many games, you get attached. It's like a story, and then it's just gone. So it's like this amazing once-in-every-four-year experience, and it's a really, really exciting game.
Yeah, and I would say if they have watched the men's game and are new to the women's game, it is just as beautiful, if not, you know, in its own way. Sometimes the men's game can be overly physical and maybe not as
finessed.
Yeah, and it's just, it's a difference.
Good.
You know, obviously. Yeah, you can, all those words. But I think that I've heard people say, you know, I love watching men's soccer, but then women's, it's just different, and it's exciting to watch, and it's a beautiful game as well. So,
and I'll say that you should watch Women's World Cup because this is going to be a super exciting tournament. As you guys know, a lot of what we do at 538 is forecasting and doing predictions for elections, but also sports. We did the Men's World Cup last summer. We did both the Men's and Women's March Madness this year. And the Women's World Cup is, like, in the last year, been our, you know, closest prediction. We're giving you guys a 28% chance of winning the tournament, which is the highest. But Germany's right behind you at 27%. Japan, France, and Canada are all up there, too. And I was just curious if you guys felt like the competition really is this close. Like, for Brazil last year, they had a 45% chance of winning. Like, Kentucky men's basketball was 40%. Like, UConn women's basketball, 70%. So, like, there were these clear front runners, and now this tournament is starting to look like it's, like, a lot of, you know, very top-heavy, a lot of good teams here at the top, even though you guys are still at the very top. But do you feel like that is an accurate assessment of the game?
Yeah, I think from a general perspective, that speaks to how much the women's game has progressed. And we see that in leagues with top international players coming in and having played abroad. You know, the game's growing globally, and that makes the World Cup so much more exciting. And also, I feel like in soccer, I mean, the predictions are really tough. So, like, I'm surprised to hear that Brazil had such a high prediction.
Yeah.
Because,
last year.
Yeah, it's hard to...
So it's interesting because, like, home field advantage, like,
yes, clearly
counts for a lot. In the model, you know, we use things like your friendlies versus your international games get weighted differently, like how big of a scoring margin, like all these things go into the model. And so Brazil obviously had a huge home field advantage. And this year we've been toying with giving you guys sort of home field advantage, even though it's in Canada, because some of the games have sold out to all U.S. fans. So there's been some interesting quirks of the women's tournament.
So we got a little bit of a home field advantage.
Like a tiny, but... yeah, and also, you know, we don't have the same, like, sort of club data that exists for the women's tournament, which I think is unfortunate, because I think that would even give you guys more of a bump to have, you know, players, like, that played abroad and you guys that play here, and how well you do with your club team sort of doesn't go into this equation, which it does with the men's game, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to see the numbers that you sent in the email last night, that some teams were lower than I expected them to be. You know, obviously 20% doesn't seem like a lot, but I guess when you compare it to everyone else's percentage, it's the highest, which is interesting. But I do think that the line between teams, is definitely closed over the years. And I think that makes it so much more exciting, because we're going to have so many good matchups at this World Cup, and it's going to be really fun to watch.
Totally. Speaking of good matchups, the group match against Sweden is probably the biggest one that's, like, in the foreseeable future. Like, everything else feels so, like, up in the air. Like, the World Cup finals, like, you know, whatever. I think we're giving you guys a 58% chance of winning that game. Sweden's only at about a 20% chance. I know you've played Sweden a few times since Pia has been their coach, but what is this game going to be like? You know, they beat you guys in the last... You know, you weren't there, but you were there group stage in 2011. Mm-hmm. This is your old coach. I don't know, is that game sort of on the mind more than others? Or
for me, no. The only game I really care about at this point is Australia, and just focusing on that. So, I mean, you know, you have to play. You know, we have Australia, Sweden, Nigeria. But at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is the 90 minutes of Australia that we get to play. And then, you know, once we get that result or whatever it may be, then we can move on and focus on Sweden. So... Yeah,
and I think that Sweden has sort of a special place in my heart, because I really did learn a lot about myself there, and I have a lot of good friends on the team, and our team has just so many ties to them, with Tony being here and Pia being there and having six players on our current team that were in Sweden at one point. So we have a lot of respect.
So everyone's just going to be, like, hugging on the field and high-fiving?
Well, the thing about it is sort of when you get to this stage, it makes it that much more fierce. The competition.
Yeah.
It's born out of respect and, like, an admiration. And, you know, I love those girls, but, you know, it makes the game even more high stakes.
You were like, we have to stop texting, like, come May 1st.
If
I see you in Canada,
texting.
You're dead to me. just kidding. So you guys were both true forwards in college, where I watched you be infinitely better than me, which is why you're in this matching black outfit, and I'm looking better than you right now. just kidding. But you both have had to, you know, transition on the national team from in college, you both you actually are tied for the scoring record at Stanford, 26 goals in a season. Yeah. I think Kristen beat you on career. But it's okay. You both scored a lot of goals. And now on the national team, Kelly, you've had to play in an outside back role. Kristen, you've been dabbling in outside midfield, which I just think is crazy. It's like this was a position you played your whole life. You were clearly very good at it. So how's that been to just, like, get used to doing something that you were totally not used to until you got here?
I mean, obviously, outside back is much different than playing forward, and it was a challenge, but at the same time, I enjoyed doing it because, for me, I obviously loved playing forward, but at the same time, enjoyed, you know, trying to work towards being that complete player and being able to play anywhere. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's fun scoring goals, but I also like to stop them, and that's kind of my role now.
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, I still consider myself a forward. I'm not letting go of that identity, but it's actually been great to play on the national team in a wide midfield role, completing myself sort of as a player. But every position and every role in teams are different, and I think that I'm much more comfortable playing wide with this team because that's where I've been practicing and that's where I have my relationships on the field, and that's where I have been coached and been accepted, and so I think that that makes all the difference.
All right, thank you guys so much for squeezing me in. I know it's been crazy, but good luck. I'm so excited to watch you guys play.
Thanks for having us.
Hey guys, it's Chad again. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Allison, of course, for doing the interviews. Keep checking the website as the tournament progresses for more coverage. Next week, we'll be back with Neil Payne, Kate Fagan, and yes, of course, Allison McCann. Talk to you then.